Today on Focal Point with Pastor Mike Fabares.
You know what? You may be tempted because you've seen a little compliment come your way, or some people affirm you about your gifts or your skills or your talents, and people say, you really ought to do that for God. You really ought to step out and try and use that for... Be careful, because the minute you start thinking it's about you or putting confidence in you, you're going to miss it. It is not about you, and it's not about putting confidence in you. It is about your confidence being squarely in God alone. And Jonathan shows me that.
Welcome to Focal Point. Today, Pastor Mike Fabares is continuing a practical message about doing great things for God while still staying humble. It's a message he's titled, Prerequisites for Doing Something Great. And we're learning from Jonathan's courage and humble confidence in 1 Samuel chapters 13 and 14. Now, if you missed the first part of this message, you can catch up online anytime by going to focalpointradio.org. Just look for the series called One Plus God. And now, let's dive in.
Number one on your outline, if you're taking notes this morning, if you're ever going to do anything great for God, if in the remaining time you have on this earth, you're going to really accomplish something great in the kingdom of God, you cannot be intimidated by the intimidating. And there's lots of intimidating things out there that would prevent us from thinking about conquering or doing anything great for God. But you can't be intimidated if you're going to do something great. Fear has no place in this kind of offensive Christian life. You see, because Saul's life was characterized, we learned earlier, by fear, anxiety, insecurities. Jonathan's life, though, who was ready to step out from playing defense to playing offense, was characterized by courage. He was not going to be intimidated. That's a big deal. How often in our lives have we had thoughts of doing something great for God, but we haven't taken the first step toward accomplishing those things because we are afraid? We have all these fears. We start thinking, well, you know, what if it doesn't, you know, turn out? And what if they reject me? And what if I step up to the plate and try and do that, lead that Bible study, share the gospel with my neighbor, do something for the kingdom? If I, you know, I could fail, it would be bad. And do you think Jonathan was thinking any of those things? Well, if he was, you can't see it here. Because he was going to overshadow his fears with courage. One of the great things about my job, I get to read all week long. And one of the great things about biblical studies is you can read commentators and commentaries on this book, because it's been around forever, of course, that span the ages. And so I get to read the latest stuff that comes out on 1 Samuel. I get to read really old stuff that's been around for years on 1 Samuel. And sometimes reading old commentators is kind of interesting, the things that they say. And so you have to read it carefully, and sometimes they'll come off with statements that just get my attention. Well, I read this one commentary in this passage, and this dear old guy right in this commentary said this, and it just floored me. Let me quote it for you. He was talking about Jonathan's courage here, basically, and he said this about leaving the camp and going out to fight this battle. Here's what he said verbatim. He said, after all, he said, if Jonathan failed, he could only lose his life. I thought to myself, that's a big deal, you know? I mean, what do you mean he could only lose his life? That's major. And I read that. There was no explanation, no cross references, no elaboration. Just that's what he said. And I was like, I pondered that. God used that guy's statement who wrote, I don't know, hundreds of years ago. And I thought, you know, he's onto something there. Because if he failed, he would fail at doing something great, and all it would cost him would be his life. And though in my first response, I think that's a huge, humongous deal. When I think of this in light of New Testament truths that Jesus tried to work into the thick skulls of his disciples, it makes complete and total sense. Because you know, don't you, in Luke chapter 12, Jesus said to his disciples, do not fear the one who can kill the body and then after that can do no more. Now, again, if I'm there sitting on a rock contemplating what Jesus is saying out there by the Sea of Galilee, I'm going to say, that's enough, right? They can kill the body. That's a lot. I don't want my body killed. I want to stay alive. But Jesus is saying, think bigger. Think bigger. Think bigger. They kill you. That's all they can do. Now, we're not fighting Philistines here today. As a matter of fact, if you thought of something at the beginning of this message about something that might be a great exploit for God, I doubt it would cost you your life. But fear would say, well, what would happen? You really try to stand up for God at your workplace, you get some complaints, you get people, you know, starting to ridicule you, you could, you know, get written up, you could get reprimanded, you could lose your job. If you lost your job, you'd lose your income, and you don't have a lot of savings, and you couldn't, and unemployment, who knows what kind of job you could get, and your education would not, and I could maybe not get another job, we'd have to go on welfare, and then welfare dry up, and if welfare dries up, I won't have any money, and then, I mean, if you're the ultimate pessimist, maybe you went way down this road, right? But let's just say the worst thing happens. You try to stand up for Christ at work and start a Bible study at lunch, or you try to share the gospel with your neighbors. If the worst thing happens, I mean, the worst that could happen could be that you die, right? Whether it's immediately or some through some long series of events. And if you do, Jesus says, so? Well, wait a minute, so that is a big deal, isn't it? The perspective of the New Testament is so much bigger. And the perspective of Jonathan is so much bigger. And that commentator hit the nail right on the head. The worst that could happen could be that he would attempt something great and die. That's what the books of the martyrs are all about. We've got volumes on our shelf about people that have died in these exploits for Christ. And do you know what the old martyrs used to say about the day that they died? They'd call it graduation day. They would say that would be the day that would be ushered into the presence of Christ, not at the end of some debauched life, but attempting great things for God. And if we died attempting great things for God, man, that would be good. They actually viewed martyrdom as a superior way to go. They said, that's not that bad. And like D.L. Moody once said, he said, the day you read in the papers of my death and that I'm dead, don't you believe it? He says, that day, I'll be more alive than I've ever been. You know what? Death for us, not the end. And if that's the worst that can happen, okay. Do you see what I'm saying to you? If you are not going to be intimidated by the intimidating, what you're going to be is a man or woman of courage. And if you're a man or woman of courage, you are not going to be afraid of what might happen if you attempt great things for God. Because you have a humongous safety net underneath you that will protect you, not necessarily from harm, because you might be harmed and the worst could happen, but if it does, you will be ushered into the presence of God Himself as a hero in the kingdom. Think about that. I don't mean to sound like I'm a kamikaze Christian or some, you know, death wish guy or something, but I'm just saying, if the worst happened, is it really all that bad? I mean, if we really believe our theology, is it? You know, back in the late 30s, they were building the Golden Gate Bridge, largest suspension bridge that's ever been attempted. Pylons that they set in the bay were almost 750 feet high. Think about that. It suspended a highway that's 200 feet above the surface of the water. You driven across that thing? You ever driven across the bridge on a windy day? You've looked down there in the San Francisco Bay and it's just got white caps and it's windy and it's just like, I mean, it's scary to drive across the bridge on a windy day. Can you imagine building it on a windy day? Do you know those old guys, and they have old black and white pictures of when they were constructing this bridge in the late 30s, and they were up there with these little scaffoldings building this thing and welding it and putting these big bolts in place and all of that? You know, I would think that'd be a scary thing to do, and my fears, you know, my vicarious fears were realized when I read the history of the building of this, and you know, a lot of people lost their lives building that bridge. They would be up there on a scaffolding, wind would whip up, push them right off that thing, and they would fall hundreds of feet to the cold waters of the San Francisco Bay, and they would die. Morale was down, costs were up, employees were not happy about what was going on here, insurance rates, I'm sure, were astronomical. It was a bad scene. When some manager had a brilliant idea and he said, you know what we should do? We ought to build a net that sits underneath the scaffolding of these workers. And if we build this net and put it underneath these workers, they won't have anything to worry about. Because if the wind knocks them off their scaffolding, or if they get lazy or something happens and they fall, they slip and fall, they'll fall, you know, 8-10 feet into a net and it'll catch them. That was a brilliant idea. because it did for them what Matthew 6 and Luke 12 and various passages should do for us. It put underneath them this wonderful sense of security. Do you know what happened in the building of the Golden Gate Bridge in the late 30s? In the second half of the building of that bridge, you know how many people fell off the scaffolding into the net? Zero. They built the net and they didn't even need it. Do you think it had anything to do with the fact that they knew I don't have anything to lose? Do you know they built the second half of the Golden Gate Bridge in half of the time that they took to build the first half of it? And it wasn't because they knew what they were doing. I think a lot of it was the morale of these workers who knew we got nothing to worry about. Matter of fact, it's kind of cool up here. Got a nice view of everything. It's really great. If I fall off, no big deal. It'd be kind of fun. I'm thinking about doing it. You know? They had nothing to worry about. And all I'm saying to you is that you and I, in attempting something radically great for God, have nothing to worry about. Because the worst this world can serve up to us is their rejection and all their other guff that they send us. It doesn't matter, because the worst they can do is kill us. It's okay. Lots of good Christians have died in pursuits of great things. And so it was. The commentator hit the nail on the head. After all, if Jonathan failed, he could only lose his life. I'd like that. You know what? If I attempt something great for God, muster biblical courage in my heart and think, God, I am going to step out and try and do something significant, spiritual and eternal in my workplace, in my community, in my world, I got nothing to worry about. The net is there. Got to be courageous. Terrible situation. Saul sitting around under a pomegranate tree. His son says, I'm going. Let's go over to the camp of the Philistine outpost. Verse 2. Chapter 14. Saul staying at the outskirts of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree in Migron. There were with him about 600 men. And you think that the writer had to tell us what kind of tree he was sitting under? I mean, there's more to this than just what tree he was sitting under. It really shows the contrast here, doesn't it? Between Dad with the crown on his head, who has already been proved to in the book of Samuel be driven by insecurities and fear. He's sitting there playing defense, sipping his, you know, lemonade under the pomegranate tree. His son is saying, how can we take these guys? Let's do something great for God today. What a stark contrast. 600 men were sitting there with him. We had Ahijah, who was wearing the ephod, it says in verse 3. That's the uniform of the priesthood, as we've already learned. He was the son of Ichabod's brother. Remember that guy? Son of Phinehas. Ahijah, rather, was the son of Ahitub, who was Phinehas' brother. Build your family tree there. But the bottom line was, he's the great-grandson of Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh. And no one was aware that Jonathan had left. Now, do you see what's happened here? He has, Jonathan, left his dad. He's left the king. He's left the king's army. He's left everything that the average person sitting in the camp was trusting in to deliver them. It shows clearly, if Jonathan's going to say, come on, armor bearer, let's go, that he wasn't trusting in his dad. He wasn't trusting in the Israeli army. He wasn't trusting in the king. He wasn't trusting in the tools of warfare they had. He wasn't trusting in any of those things. His trust must have been somewhere else. Read on. Verse 4. Each side of the pass that Jonathan intended to cross to reach the Philistine outpost was a cliff. One was called Bazez and the other was called Senon. I guess they named these things because they were ominous cliffs. One cliff stood to the north toward Michmash and the other to the south toward Geba. So he had to go through this ravine, down one side of the cliff, up the side of the other if he was going to get to the Philistine outpost. Jonathan said to the young armor bearer that was with him, come, let us go over to the outpost of those uncircumcised fellows. Perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf. That is critically important. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few. Who's he trusting in? Is it clear? He is not trusting, and we might think as rugged Americans, that he's leaving this outpost like John Wayne, you know, I'm going to take him, I'm going to get him, and he's trusting in himself, but we see clearly he's not trusting in himself. He doesn't say, I'm not trusting in my dad, I'm not trusting in the army, I'm not trusting in the nation of Israel. Perhaps I can do something about this. That would make a good movie, but it doesn't make good biblical narrative because that's not really how it works in the Bible. It's not about the hero stepping out, beating his chest, saying, come on, let me at him, I'm going to take him. You see, number two on your outline, if you're ever going to do anything great for God the rest of your life, you'd better, number two, fully trust in God, get this word now, alone. You need to fully trust in God alone. Not your leadership, not your church, not your background, not your education, not your talents, not your skills, not yourself. I don't trust in you. You need to fully trust in God alone. That's where Jonathan's heart was. You know, every year, it seems, I'm forced to watch The Sound of Music. Any husbands here forced to watch that once a year? Yeah, me too. And it's a long movie too, isn't it? Anyway, I'm watching this movie once a year. You know, I've got the lines memorized by this point. It's good though, scores points with the wife. It's a good thing to watch a musical every now and then. So I'm watching this, and there's one spot in the film that I always, you know, seem to pick something up and throw it at the television because it so irks me. And I do that every now and then, you know, just whatever I got nearby, throw it at the television in kind of a symbolic act of disgust. And the one point in that movie that I always seem to throw something at the TV is when the mother of the Abbey sends out Fräulein Maria to take care of the Von Trapp family children. And she does it, of course, reluctantly because she doesn't want to do it. I mean, I'm assuming you know the story. If you don't, congratulations. I mean, but I happen to know it. And so there she is. And you remember, you know, some of us that know the story, I got the big brimmed hat on. She's got the guitar case. And, you know, as they do in musicals, she broke out in song as she's walking down the road. You've seen this, right? And she's trying to kind of get her courage up to do this. And she starts singing a song about courage. Now, you know, as though I had to look the lyrics up, I did. I should have them memorized by this point. But nevertheless, here's what she sings. You want to hear what she, here's what she sings. Good nun, now, don't forget that. She says, I must stop these doubts and all these worries. If I don't, I know I'll just turn back. I must dream of the things I'm seeking. I'm seeking the courage I lack. So far, so good. I mean, you got a battle to fight. It's a big deal. Here's her answer. So let them bring on their problems. I'll do better than my best. I have confidence they'll put me to the test, but I'll make them see I have confidence. You know it, ladies. In me, she says. With each step, I'm more certain. Everything will turn out fine. I have confidence the world can be mine. They'll have to agree. I have confidence in me. I have confidence in sunshine. I have confidence in rain. She says, I have confidence that spring will come again. But besides which, you see, I have confidence in me. Now, listen, people. Whatever you do, don't be like Fräulein Maria and put confidence in you. That's the wrong thing to do. The Bible makes it overwhelmingly clear, and if you put your finger in 1 Samuel 13 and 14 and turn over with me to Psalm 33, let me show you what song she should have been singing. Let me show you what the Bible says we need to trust in when it comes to doing something great for God. You're going to make some great endeavor and do some great exploit for the King of Kings. That's wonderful. Be a man or a woman of courage, and then put your confidence in one place and one place only. Psalm 33, verse 16 says, Psalm 33, verse 16, no king is saved by the size of his army. Now, immediately we'll protest and say, now, wait a minute, I've seen a few battles, and they do win. Sometimes the bigger team wins. Isn't that right? Well, it may look that way, but the Bible says no. No warrior escapes by his great strength. Now, wait a minute, I've read about Samuel. And I've read about Samson, and I've read about Jephthah, and I've read about all these great men. It seems like, you know, they're flexing their muscles, and they're doing great. Well, that may look that way, but that ain't it. Verse 17, a horse is a vain hope for deliverance. Despite all its great strength, it cannot save. But the eyes of the Lord, here's the key to success, are on those who fear him, on those whose hope is in themselves. Whose hope is in God's unfailing love to deliver them from death, to keep them alive in famine. Do you see where the hope is? Do you see where the confidence is? Verse 20, we wait in hope for Yahweh. He is our help and our shield. In him our hearts rejoice, for we trust in his holy name. May your unfailing love rest upon us, O Lord, even as we put our hope in you. You know what? You may be tempted because you've seen a little compliment come your way, or some people affirm you about your gifts or your skills or your talents, and people say, you really ought to do that for God. You really ought to step out and try and use that for... Be careful, because the minute you start thinking it's about you or putting confidence in you, you're going to miss it. It is not about you, and it is not about putting confidence in you. It is about your confidence being squarely in God alone. And Jonathan shows me that. He shows me that because he doesn't say, you know what, I can't trust my dad, and I can't count on the armies of Israel. I can count on me. That's the American motto. But it's not the biblical virtue by which we're to live. We're to walk into doing great things for God, and sometimes it'll be scary and it'll feel like we're the only one out there, because we'll step out of the crowd and we'll say, I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to do something great for God. And it'll be scary, and you'll need courage, and then you're going to have to make a decision about where your confidence is going to go. And your confidence needs to go squarely in God and nothing else. And don't get cocky in your confidence either, because some people I find start saying, I trust God, and they start saying, well, I'm trusting in God for this, so it's going to happen. Would you look at the next verse in our passage back there in 1 Samuel chapter 14? Middle of verse 6, Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come, let us go over to the outpost of those uncircumcised fellows. Circle this next word. It says, for the Lord will act on our behalf. Is that what it says? Because I know when I command the Lord, he'll come and he'll do it. Because I've named it and I've claimed it. Because I've said in the name of Yahweh, the Philistine armies will be defeated today. In the name of the Lord, I command it. I speak it and I believe it. It's done. Is that what he says? Big old fat Hebrew word, sit in the beginning of the sentence. What's the word? Perhaps. You know, this may sound like an oxymoron to you, but make sure your confidence is a humble confidence. We put confidence in God, but we don't know exactly what his will is all the time, do we? So when we step out to do something great for God, and I've made these kinds of statements before, oh God, I want to see this happen. I want you to do this great thing, and I want to bolster my courage, and I want to have confidence in you. But before I go around saying, this is what the Lord will do because I'm trusting in him, I've got to have a humble confidence in God, don't I? I got to say like Jonathan, perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf. Because I've got no corner on the mind of God. I don't know exactly. But I'm going to have confidence in him. I'm going to trust him, but it's not going to be a prideful trust. It's not going to be a name or claim it kind of trust.
We're walking the line of having confidence in God while still remaining humble. This is day two of the message, Prerequisites for Doing Something Great. And you're listening to Pastor Mike Fabares on Focal Point. We're partway through this practical and inspiring series called One Plus God. And I hope you'll continue joining us every day this week. But if you miss a message, you can always listen online at focalpointradio.org. You know, part of having humble confidence in God is knowing what his will is for your life. And we've selected a special resource for this month as you seek biblical wisdom and insight in this area. It's a book titled A Cloud by Day, A Fire by Night by author A.W. Tozer. If you or a loved one are wrestling with a big decision on the horizon, you'll appreciate having this resource by your side. We'll send you a copy today as our way of saying thanks when you invest in your fellow listeners by donating to this ministry. Ask for the book, A Cloud by Day, A Fire by Night, when you give today by calling 888-320-5885. That's 888-320-5885. Or donate online at focalpointradio.org. You can also send your gift in the mail to Focal Point, Post Office Box 2850, Laguna Hills, California, 92654. We always appreciate hearing from you, whether you're making a donation or letting us know which radio station you listen to. And when you contact us today, make sure to ask for our free resource from Pastor Mike. It's a booklet answering the question, what's a godly marriage? You can request your copy when you visit focalpointradio.org. And remember, one of the best ways to stay up to date with Focal Point is by downloading our free mobile app. You'll have instant access to the latest audio and video from Pastor Mike, weekly devotionals, a daily Bible reading plan, and our popular Ask Pastor Mike feature. Well, I'm your host, Dave Drewy. Glad to have you with us. And be sure to listen Tuesday as we continue our message about doing great things for God right here on Focal Point.
Hey there, Pastor Mike here. We're almost out of time, but before we go, I wanted to personally invite you to contact us here. Let us know how we can be praying for you. Head on over to focalpointradio.org and click the contact page.
or send me a note on Facebook, facebook.com/PastorMike, or twitter.com/PastorMike. Can't wait to hear from you.
Today's program was produced and sponsored by Focal Point Ministries.